Welcome, everybody, to the, 325th episode of the Between Two Wheels podcast. We are breaking down the Ardennes Classic. You say, Tyler, what are the Ardennes Classics? We'll get to it. It's Amstel Gold, it's La Flèche Wallonne, and it's Liège-Bastogne-Liège. Kind of the pinnacle of the one-day classics coming to an end. And then we're going to start into the Giro, but we'll talk about these because I think they're important races. Welcome, everybody. I'm sorry I skipped last week. It was, you know, things happen, right? And I actually had time, and for some reason, I didn't do an episode. Oh, the Masters was on. I wasn't going to do this. I was watching golf and maybe inebriated. So there we go. Victor said, Tyler Yonke gives us professional cycling commentary. Awesome. Yes. I don't know if you're still in here or can I put this out. I was going to do this at, East Coast time, 6 o'clock. And then I actually had to come in and do this right now. And there we go. So, here's a little bit of what it says on Wikipedia, which I'm not necessarily grateful for, but it's the Ardennes Classic or three cycling classics held in mid-April in the Belgian Ardennes and the Southern Limburg in the Netherlands. Liège-Bastogne-Liège, La Flèche Wallonne, and Amstel Gold. And it lists them in reverse order. First held in 1892, 1936, and 1966, respectively. Okay, well, that's why it was listed that way. The races are notable for their hilly courses and often have similar riders competing for the top position as the races are held closely following each other. Cyclists that are specialized in these hilly courses are known as ponchiers. In recent years, the three classics have been held within an 8-day time frame. Since the late 2010s, all three of the men's races have been joined by equivalent races on the women's circuit, Amstel Gold for the women, La Flèche Wallonne Feminine, and Liège-Bastogne-Liège Femmes. Do we want to talk about a little? Let's get a little history. Prior, there was already points classification. I don't know. With the introduction of the Amstel Gold race, originally between races, the period between the Belgian classics was extended to 1.5 weeks. Since then, the original points classification became unofficial, so we don't really care about that. Only male winners are the triple. Of the triple are Davide Rebellin. Did he just die recently? I want to think so. Let's take a look. Davide, you click on him, and it doesn't say that he's dead, but I think he might have. Philippe Gilbert in 2011. Gilbert also won the Brabants-Appel, another important hill classic in mid-April, winning the quadruple that year. Other riders to win all three races, though not in a single year, are Daniele De Luca, druggy, Michele Bartoli, Eddie Merckx, Bernardino, and Tadej Pogačar. 2017 women's races for all three of the Ardennes Classics were held for the first time, with Liège-Bastogne-Liège-Femmes making its debut alongside a revival of the women's Amstel Gold race, which has previously been held 2001 to 2003, and La Flèche Wallonne Feminine, which has been held since 1998. Anna van der Breggen immediately clinched the triple by winning all three races, followed by teammate Lizzie Dinan in second and Katarzyna Nuadama in third in all the three events. There's no official competition connecting all three of the races, although there have been classifications past two Wallonne races. In the recent years, these three hill classics are held in the second half of April, following a similar set of cobbled classics. Later in the year, there are two similar trebles in Italy, the Trittoco Lombardio and the Tre Valle Verasin, Coppa Uno Agonistina, and the Coppi Bernacchi in Lombardia region. I don't know what those have to do with anything. Milano Torino, Giro di Piemonte, and Giro di Lombardia. I don't know what that has to do with much of anything. Eddie Merckx has won this a bunch of these races. I find somewhat interesting when we talk about, because there's what's called classics. I mean, there's monuments. So maybe I'll click here and go cycling monuments. Okay. Cycling monument. Five classic races generally considered to be the oldest, hardest, and longest and most prestigious one-day events in men's road racing. They each have a long history and specific individual characteristics. They are currently the one-day races in which most points are earned. And what are they? Eddie Merckx is by far the most successful. Okay. List of monuments. Milan San Remo, which we had already this year. Tour of Tour of Flanders, Paris-Roubaix, Liège-Bastogne-Liège, Giro de Lombardia, which comes on the, that's the end. Now there's semi-monuments, which I think Amstel Gold kind of falls in that picture. Strada Bianca kind of falls in that picture. But what's interesting is they start, since these are men monuments and men's cycling has been, you know, some of these first edition, you know, 1894, 1892 for Liège, 1896 for Paris-Roubaix, 1913 for Tour of Flanders, 1907 for Milan-San Remo, Giro de Lombardia, 1905. So there's a lot of history and tradition that which makes them these kind of races and these hard races. And like I said, there's a Tour de France, which has, it's a grand tour. There's three grand tours, and those grand tours are specified by being 3 weeks. And there's Vuelta, which is in Spain. There's Giro d'Italia, which is in Italy. And there's Tour de France. What's your point here, Tyler? My point on these is then you have the women, okay, and they have similar races, which is, you know, maybe you've only been doing them for 4 or 5 years. And they call them, you know, people on the TV or, you know, Lantern Rouge, yeah, it's classics. I'm like, okay, so you just name them because the men have them as well. I don't buy it. Create your, and then this is what I've talked about for women's cycling in years, which is create your own genre. Let me enjoy your racing for what it is rather than be a lesser of the men's race. Okay, and by the way, more exciting perhaps some of the women's racing than the men's racing. But if you want to see faster racing and more impressive, just like basketball or whatnot, you watch the men's. That's just the way it is. So women need to give me something else. And then we got Cassia Niewiadoma is winning. So I guess I got something else. And so maybe we'll talk about that. But what I think we first would need to start with is let's go to Amstel Gold. Okay. So we're going to look at, and we're going to do like we've done before, we're going to kind of click through some of these things. Now, you know, we've talked about some of the races have been changed a bit due to the fact that, you know, some of the guys have been hurt. Who's all going to come out? So let me take a look at Amstel Gold. I'm going to look at it on, okay. So 253 kilometers, a ton of these little pop, pop, pop climbs. And, you know, it's an interesting race and where are we going to, you know, what's going to happen with this one? So we look at a few years ago, I think this is the one where I want to say 2019 when, Matthew Vanderpoel did a heist of everybody. Their group was off the front and he comes through in the last few kilometers, ends up catching them in the last 1000 meters and sprints and win. And it was pretty exciting. So for, the teams going in here, you had UAE Team Emirates, Juan Ayuso, Brandon McNulty. They did not have Pogacar coming in there. Ben Healy for EF Education, Vanderpoel for Alpecin, Pidcock for Ineos. Jorgensen was slated to go for Visa Leasing Bike. I don't know if he actually ended up showing up, but I think he was in there, but Tish Benoot was in there for them. Sevenot for Sudal, Bora had Shockman, but really, you know, they don't really bring their best. It seems like here, Warren Barguil, Kevin Vermaak for DSM, blah, blah, blah. And the list continues and we will go on from there. So, hang on here. Let me take a look here. So, okay, let's walk through. Sorry, let's walk through some of this. I don't know if I remember all that what happened here in this race. Okay, now we're gonna. There we go. But as always, get a break out front.
This is the.
Oh, geez. And then you got commercial stuff here. Sorry about this. Is what we got to do. Got to kind of walk our way through this. Wait till the commercial ends, and then we'll skip, and then we'll be able to walk our way through there. Okay. So yeah, Carapaz, I believe, was up in this group with the Amstel Gold, and it kind of lit off. There wasn't a lot that I was really impressed with. They had an EF rider up the road. You had a rider up the road for it's not your Brazil Premier Tech. It's the AG2R. And really what you ended up having here was a group of riders that got off the front here with Tom Pidcock. You had Hershey and a few others. And Tish Benoot gets up there. I don't remember all the details in the race, but it does come down to basically a sprint finish, which was an interesting And we're back. I don't know what just happened there, but we had a little bit of a glitch. Okay. Tish Benoit, though, gets up in the road with the group. I think this was kind of a back and forth. He did a good job up in the break. But in the end, you had it coming down to a sprint finish. And Tom Pidcock, Hershey, there was a group that was kind of, you can see them all kind of coming together here. Van Sevenot was up there with them, and he ended up leading the group out because another short group was coming up to catch them. And Tish Benoit got outkicked at the line with Hershey and Tom Pidcock. And I believe it was Tish Benoit was second, Tim Pidcock for the win. Let's see what he has to say here.
I was going to say, yeah, it's great to win for the second time, but that might create quite some controversy.
Okay, well, you did actually say it. So basically what he's referencing there is that back a while ago, there was a sprint finish between he and Wout Van Aert, and Wout was given the win. It was a long time, and it's hard to see with the video, but in the finish line camera, I probably should have given him a tie, but they didn't. They gave him the win to Wout. So let's look. So Tom Pidcock actually gets the Amstel Gold race here. Win Tish Benoit in third. Sorry, Mark Hershey in second. Van Sevenot in fourth, and then we had Paul LaPerry for Decathlon, Valentin Madwa for Groupama FDJ in sixth, Bauke Mollema in seventh, Quentin Pacher in eighth, Pau Bilbao in ninth, Michael Matthews in 10th, and do we have any Americans? Kevin Vermarket down there in 24th. So yeah, that was the race we had for them. So now look, coming up here, then we had La Flèche Wallonne, and what I'm not going to show that one real quick. We're going to talk about the women. This one is a interesting race for the fact that it has okay, you come up to the last, it's like a 1.1 kilometer climb, and it is super super steep at the top, and it kills everyone every time. And they at least the men come and do it around the circuit. They hit it four times in the last, you know, it's like a 7 to 12 kilometer, I think, circuit. And they do that four times, at least the men. The women coming through here, I'm just going to kind of click through what we had in the end here. They come into the finish because you really only care about coming up the Mire de Huy, at least the last kilometer and a half. And for the women, it was Vollering was up here, and Niwa Doma. And let's see if I could see the other ladies that were up here. Let's take a look here, because I don't know all their names offhand. So Lisa Longoborghini was up here as well. Those are kind of the three main that are coming up through the top as they're making the left-hand corner here. And then Niwa Doma ends up kicking with, like, I want to say, like, what do we hear about 100 meters or so to go to the line, and she kicks hard. She drops Vollering and Lamborghini, and able to. And look, you come up to the top, and it looks like it's mellowed out, but it's, you know, goes from 19% to like 6 or 7, and so you still have to really fight to the line. And Cassia Niwa Doma gets the win over Vollering and Lisa Lamborghini. And with that in mind, it does play itself into kind of the race that happened today in Liège and some of the biting. But I will say Niwa Doma hadn't won in, I want to say, like, been 4 or 5 years. She had a ton of second places. She's a great racer. I met her at the Tour of California a few years ago at the press conference, and she sat in front of me and we just chit-chatted, but I didn't do an interview with her. She's very good looking, and I think she's dating Taylor Finney. But anyway, that's where you have there. So the results of that race, let's go down for the women, for La Flèche Wallonne. Niwa Doma gets the win for Canyon SRAM. Vollering for Team SD Works. Lisa Lamborghini. Vita Music for FDJ Suez. Ashley Mühlmann or AG Insurance for sixth. Pelina Ruchgar for Fenix de Koenig. Do we have any Americans anywhere on the board? I don't see any Americans. There's a Veronica Ewers down there, 75th place at 520 back. Booyah. And there you go. All right, so with that in mind, come into today for the women for Liège-Bastogne-Liège. And as far as the race goes, it was more entertaining race than the men's. But, you know, I mean, like I've said before, sometimes there... I guess we actually need to talk about Flèche Wallonne for the men, right? So the Flèche Wallonne, the weather was the key part of this race. It was really, really bad. And let's go back up here. I want to take a look at what the distance is. Okay, see if I could find... Boy, they're making it tough on me here. Let's go. Oh, man. Pro Cycling News is making it really tough on me. I got to pick someone that actually was... There we go. Okay. It's so stupid. Okay, so this race is not as long. It's 198.6 kilometers. And like I said, you hit the Mur de Huy four times coming into that finish, just, you know, killing it up the top there. And early on in the race, you had UAE. Now, the weather was part of this. At one point when I tuned in, the weather, the rain was like sideways. There was sleet. There was snow. And it looked really bad. And some of the riders were not, and there's been all kinds of speculation about it this week, but riders were just not prepared. And it blows me away that, I mean, we've all ridden in bad weather. And yeah, so I've done big races and big rides where you are dressed appropriately. I've done, and then the weather changes, either gets worse, and so that's good. Or sometimes how you're dressed initially or you take stuff, the weather gets better and now you're hot with stuff on. Okay. But we've also raced, I've also raced in like 115, 112, 110, 105 degree heat where you're just baking as well. And I actually do well on the heat. So, part of the problem, what I saw here with people, and it's even played effective with Liège today, which is you're not dressing appropriately, or you think for some reason you have to continually be taking off your clothing. Now, these clothing are amazing the way they are. I mean, I'm looking at the picture of the winner here. He's got a Gabba jersey, I believe, on a jacket, gloves, knee warmers, or leg warmers. The only thing he doesn't have are booties on. I mean, I've never gone in a race or finished a ride, you know, where you may be a little bit overdressed, and it's really hindered you. So I don't always understand why you wouldn't dress appropriately for this. And as it came out, Skumos for Little Trek was dressed totally just, he didn't have, I don't even know if he had gloves on, didn't have leg warmers, his knees were exposed. You know, my coach used to always say, if it's at least, you know, this is Fahrenheit, 60 degrees or below, always have something on your knees, at least that's for training. But it always just makes sense, and you got to keep your temperature right. Now, if you're overdressed, you can unzip some things. You can, you know, especially when it comes down to the it's not necessarily aerodynamics playing a part in this race as much as it is coming to that last climb. Pour some water on you or whatever if you need to, if you're overdressed. That's not the problem here, because the rain was coming even at the near the end. So you had UAE hits the front at one point. They're dropping their own riders out the back. They're killing the whole group. None of them finished. Now, once again, since we come and we do a circuit here for Flèche Wallonne, if you're kind of out the back or the weather's horrible and you're coming to the start finish the first time and you're already out the back, you're just going to quit. It's, you know, at this point, it's not point to point so bad where you've just got to finish the race and go in. You're just going to pull up shop and you're going to be done with it, right? So that's part of the issue of only having, let's see if I could even see here, 44 riders finishing. The last guy finishes 7 minutes down and everyone's just kind of like, see ya. So no UAE even finishes it. They come up to the last kick on the climb and it's looking pretty good. You got Cosnefroy up there. You have almost a whole team of Uno X up there. That's the team from, I don't know what they're, Norway. So it kind of makes sense at some point. You have Butrago up there for Bahrain, Van Gils, he's been riding well, Kevin Vakalon is up there, Van Wilder, Carapaz, Tom Squeens is losing his whole team, like I said, Skumos actually was hyperthermic at the end, and he didn't finish the race as well, anyway, they're coming up, they're hitting the climb, and about 300 meters or so, Steve Williams of Israel Primotech attacks up the left-hand side, and he ends up holding on to the finish, and maybe we'll go to some of the video for that. We can kind of break it down. We'll do this quick overview of the race. Hopefully we won't have too many problems like the commercials and stuff here. So like I said, 200 kilometers. You can just see the weather was horrible. Like I said, UAE all in the front, just killing the ride, but also just spitting their own guys out the back. They're hitting up the rear the first time, I think, with 60-some kilometers to go. It's a brutal day. Guys are having trouble, but look how some of them are dressed. It's literally like, you know, 6 degrees Celsius. None of these doofuses have knee warmers on. This guy over here doesn't have any arm warmers on. I don't even know if they're wearing gloves. Guys are having trouble getting stuff. Now, you got a guy off the front, Soren Kral Andersen. He ends up taking off the front. And the second to last time they come over the top of the rear, you have a group that comes over, which is, I think, Vakalon. It's like Steve Williams. Steve Williams is like, great coming over here. It's a little portent of things to come. They have one more time to go, and he does sit up and waits for the chase group. So Kral Andersen, he was out there on his own for quite some time. They finally did catch him, but you could just see the weather wasn't so great here at all.
Behind.
There you go. So there's a little bit of a break. Steve Williams comes up here with these guys. They all end up sitting up. The group kind of comes back together, whatever that group really is. And they hit the mirror the last time. Carapaz, I thought he was going to actually have a great chance at this. Tom Pidcock was frozen out of the back. He wasn't part of this. Tish Benoit looked actually pretty good here as well. Like I said, Batrago does. But in the end, Steve Williams kicks over the top. And he comes over this last bit, and he looks like he's going to be winning it. But Vakalon is really closing down pretty quick on him to the point where I was a little worried that he wasn't going to make it. But Steve Williams did end up making it. There you go. Someone sponsored him for some dental work, and then we'll get that there. Steve Williams, Vakalon, Van Giel's been looking good for Lotto. Cosnefoy does a great job to come in third because he's more of a sprinter type with Buitrago, Johannessen, Gregori, Gordon Banut, and Guillaume Martin down there in 10th place. All right, so let's get to Liège. Bastogne-Liège was today's race, which, you know, look, I got up early for it. Tadej Pogačar is in the race, and with Tadej, do I have the men's race here? Let's make sure we have the men's race. So we do have the men's race. So Tadej Pogačar is in the race, and you expect him to go. Now, coming into it, the last 40 kilometers or so, there's two big climbs. There's the Redou, that's kind of the biggest climb, and that's about 35 or so kilometers to the finish. Then you have Foucault. That's second to last, well, pretty much the last climb. There's a few little pitches up there, and I think that's around 13 kilometers to go. So you can, you know, you've seen attacks on either one of those to get to the finish here. And the way that it doesn't come into Ons anymore, it actually finished in Liège proper. Ons, when it finished there, it had a bit of a pitch up at the end. We saw that a few years ago with, I think, Mike Woods and Bardet coming in. I think it was behind Bob Jungels when he got the win. I believe that was the time there. And that's a little bit more difficult. You come all the way to the finish, and then you've got this kick coming up to climb. I enjoyed that. They don't have that anymore. Now they have a proper sprint that you can have if the groups, if they regroup coming in here. And when I tuned in, you know, Tadej Pogačar is up here. He's talking about, hey, you know, who knows what's going to happen. Yeah, Matthew Vanderpoel, who knows what he can do, because it's not really a Tom Pidcock. Jeez, and then we got these commercial things. Tom Pidcock is there. So, I mean, look at this stupid commercials that they have that make us watch there. And, you know, Tom Pidcock obviously wins Amstel Gold, but doesn't do so good in Fletch. You have Steve Williams is now looking like he might be a threat because of how he rode in La Fleche Wallon. And then there was a good group up the front, but we never knew. We knew that they weren't going to survive, especially when UAE is drilling it at the back. And, Dominic Novak is really one of the guys that was doing a lot of work here. But when you had about 90 kilometers to the finish, you can see this here. There's a wreck, and it pretty much barricaded the road. No big riders necessarily went down in the wreck, but they definitely got held back behind it. You had Tom Pidcock in behind. You had Matthew Vanderpoel. And when this wreck happened, Israel Primotech was kind of on the front, and then they drilled it. Now, there's been a little bit of controversy online. Like, do you drill it when there's a wreck happening? I don't really care. I mean, as an example, this is a situation where Matthew Vanderpoel is out of position because he went back to the car to take off his knee warmers. Once again, I don't know. Maybe he went. He's not going to win today. Okay. I think his, but maybe you, Tom Pidcock. I don't know what he's doing back there. I don't know that he was taking off knee warmers. But if I don't believe you're, that's ever a necessity to be risking your position and extra effort to take off knee warmers for a race, especially when later on it starts raining. The point is, they get about a minute and a half behind the group. He, Matthew Vanderpool and Pidcock, and it's a bit trouble. I mean, it looks like they might not be able to pull this back. They're going up one of these climbs. They're 70, 80 kilometers out. Pidcock says, screw this, and he really takes off. Now, was this move necessary? He ends up getting across. Matthew Vanderpool ends up getting across too, but Vanderpool gets across without having to really relinquish much or put out much effort. There was a situation where in the team cars, Team Bahrain, who had some riders back there too, the team car seemed to be helping some people. And in the end, Matthew Vanderpool, it doesn't look like he wastes a ton of energy getting back up to the group. He and Pidcock. Okay, now you fast forward, the group's all coming together. Dominic Novak for UAE has been on the front for like 40 kilometers or so. There's 900 meters left of the Radu at 34.8 kilometers to go in the race. And Tadej Pogacar lights it up. And Ben Healy's up there. He can't hold on to the Carapaz, tries to go up there, as does Skilmos. And Carapaz does the best job of almost, and at one point does get right on the wheel of Pogacar and then can't hold on. And Pogacar's gone. Now he's basically, we're doing what's happened here in Strada Bianca. We're doing what we saw in Flanders, or not Flanders, Paris-Roubaix with Matthew Vanderpool. And by the way, I'm a fan of good racing, and I'm not so, it's amazing what's happening here. What I'm just blown away by is this is not a Tour de France length, you know, 20 kilometer climb. It's, you know, 4 or 5 kilometers or so. And I know it's steep. I'm blown away that no one can hold Pogacar's wheel. There's got to be a rider out there that is not an exceptional. Now, there's a lot of climbing in the legs, so I know this is part of the reason it happens here. But, you know, there's got to be a guy that can go 5 minutes super deep, better than, you know, a Sepp Kuss or something like that, right? But there seems to be no one. And Carapaz doesn't. Skilmos tried to go, and Skilmos said, I ruined my race by trying to go with him. I went so deep that I couldn't recover. So, but even over the top of the climb, he only had a, you know, 10 seconds. But the problem is, Tade, the other guys went too deep, and then they couldn't catch him. Next thing you know, it's a minute 16. It's a minute 39. There is a bit of a chase group that kind of forms out of some of this up the Falcon, and Romain Bardet's with them, with Carapaz, I think Van Giels, and a few others, and he ends up attacking out of there, getting rid of them. And then you don't really, I mean, it's a battle. It's a battle of, for Tadej Pogacar, he easily wins. But behind him, at some point, the group is too big to really conglomerate or to work together to one, to bring him back, but even to bring back Bardet. It was very impressive to see Romain Bardet coming in here. Second place. What do we have here on the clock? I'm trying to see where the clock is on the minute 26. So, you know, Tadej sat up. So it was, you know, minute 45 or so. And there you go. Romain Bardet gets second place by a minute 26. And then you have a sprint for third place to still be on the podium. Matthew Vanderpool had caught up. You see a group of, like, I don't know, 15 or so riders here. And in the end, Matthew Vanderpool ends up winning that sprint to get on the podium as well. So you had Tadej Pogacar, you had Romain Bardet, and then Vanderpool for the top three. Van Giels gets third. He rode well. Parapente, he was fourth or fifth. Vasavanat, who shakes his head more than, I don't want to go into that. 202, same time for sixth place. Madwa, seventh. Lutsenko, eighth. Bilbao and Tom Pidcock pulls in a decent 10th place here. Now, the women's race, we'll talk about it just a tad bit here. It came down to it. There was a break off the front, and that break was getting well aware. Now, I told you, Demi Vollering had an, you know, got beat in Fletch by Kenenstram's Niewiadoma. So there was some really weird tactics stuff here. When you watch that race, you're just like, I don't know if anybody understands tactics. SD Works team wasn't doing their thing. So there was some strangeness. Grace Brown was off the front. They come up the Rodeau and they basically bring the brake back, but then some of the brake is still able to stay away with them. In the end, you had Kim Kadzau, Niwadoma, Elise Chabi, Demi Vollering, Elisa Longoborghini, and Grace Brown all off the front. And Demi Vollering, at some point, her and Lamborghini and Niwadoma were trying to catch the front, and up in the front was Canyon SRAM's Elise Chabi, a teammate of Niwadoma, and Lamborghini connects. And then Vollering is trying to do a thing where she's trying to kind of drop off Niwadoma, not actually connecting, but the race is now going up the road. And it's like, well, Niwadoma's not going to pull because her teammate's up the road. And I swear, Vollering was doing this simply because maybe from Fletch Wallone trying to get back at her. And then in the end, you had two teammates attacking. You had Chabi and Niwadoma trying to get away. Look, this is where I was starting off the show, basically talking about this, which is the women's racing. There was, yes, it was closer, but it's not like the men's, where it's just different type. The tactics are maybe different, a little better for the most part. When the two women are trying to attack and get up the road, you know, 1-2, you attack and then the other, there's like no separation. When they attack, they're able to sit on their wheel and just go right up to it. So it's, you're just like, ah. But in the end, Niwadoma does get a bit of a break, coming in the last kilometer, trying to really pull up there, and Vollering then finally goes to the front to pull her back. So, but then gets beat at the line by Grace Brown of FDJ Suez, second, Little Trek's Longoborghini, Vollering in third, and then the two Canyon SRAM girls, Chabi and Niwadoma, fourth and fifth, and EF Education Cannondale's Kim Kadzau in sixth place. So six stayed away. Victor. Yeah, I'm live. Between Two Wheels podcast. Is there another show at 9? I'm sorry. I scheduled it for then, and then I had to come in here and do it early. So sorry. Not going to do another one tonight. I had things I got to do. Okay, but here's the – you can go back and rewatch some of this if you want to. So what do we have coming up here? We have Tour Romandy is starting this next week. That will be interesting. Tour of the Gila, that's an American race. It's in New Mexico. That should be pretty good. And, of course, you've got the Giro coming up here on the 4th of May. It's just short because the 23rd – I mean, that's like, what, 2 weeks or so, less than that. Tour Romandy – we'll go through a little bit here. This maybe we'll bring up, share the screen and do the start list. Talk about this a little bit. So typically Tour Romandy is usually has some good hilly race stuff. So it starts out with a prologue, 2.28 kilometers, deadpan flat. Then you have a stage one. It's got a little bit of lumpiness to it, 167 kilometers. Stage two, it's got a climb and a summit finish at 171 kilometers, so that would be good. And then you have an individual time trial of 15 kilometers. It's pretty flat. I mean, it's going to be a power course at least. And stage four of five, you've got a summit finish, so that'll be a really good one as well. And then stage six, Vernier de Vernier, is all in Switzerland, by the way. That's a lumpy one. Which I think is going to be a pitchy one, which will be pretty interesting to see. But it should, you know, be a sprinter, or, you know, basically stage four is who is really you're going to be seeing take this win. But it's going to be a climbing race, right? So you should be able to see an overall. So we're going to be looking here. Michael Gogol, is he going to be a sprint or a climber for Alpecin? No, it looks like here they're for maybe some sprints or some stage races. Arkea Samsic, do they have a climber on the books? I mean, they've got climby people, but they're not. Lutsenko for Astana, Ineos Grenadiers, Egan Bernal, who actually rode fairly good today. So, you know, he was trying to catch up there. At one point, I thought he might actually be able to, when Pogacar took off, that Bernal might actually be able to reach him, but he wasn't able to. Bahrain Caruso, I mean, depends on, I think if he's going to the Giro, he might be one to look for. Giulio Ciccone for Little Trek. He can go uphill just fine. Kofidis, not really concerned about their team makeup, and I don't really see it. Jesus Herrada, I guess he can go well uphill. Vlasov for Bora. Jai Hindley, he'd need to ride a little better than he did today, but maybe, you know, this was just not his forte, perhaps. Van Wilder for Sudal Quickstep. I don't really foresee Masnada. He goes uphill just fine. Bruno Amorel for Decathlon. But I don't really see them bringing a rider that's going to light it up for them. Robert Hessink for Team Visma. I mean, Visma Lisa Bike, they're in kind of a quagmire because they lose Vingigo, and, you know, and now it looks like, you know, we've got basically the Sepp Kuss faction. That's who we're going to be waiting for, because he's going to be doing the Criterium du Dauphiné as a team leader. And I don't know if he's going to be the team leader for the tour. Maybe Matthew Jorgensen or Matteo Jorgensen here. So Tratnik is reportedly going to a different team next year, but he had a good early part of the season. Cohen Bowman could actually go well. So this will be an interesting ride going in for Team Visma Lisa Bike, but I don't know. DSM, they've had a decent start, but who's really going there? Patrick Eddy, maybe, for the climate. Michael Valgren for EF Education. James Shaw, he just won a race, I want to say, for a Tour of the Alps. He does climb fairly good also. So does Rubirger Aran and Carapaz. So EF, they have a decent team there going. Lenny Martinez for Groupama. He's obviously a guy who won the stage in the Vuelta last year. He's won some races already this year. David Gaudu for them as well. So that will be a decent team for Groupama. Remy Cavagna for Movistar. But I don't really see Oliver Nilsson. Who else? Henrik Maas. Okay, there you go. So Henrik Maas, he's up there for them. Louis Menkes for Interwanty Marche, Team Jayco, Lucas Hamilton, Eddie Dunbar, they go uphill just fine, but I think it's going to be maybe stage hunting for them. Grosschartner for UAE, Brandon McNulty, you might see Adam Yates, Ayuso, they have a solid team. So for them, it's going to be which guy is riding well, maybe going to be a Juan Ayuso, probably for them, for the team leader. Tudor, they're going to be stage hunting unless you get one of these guys that just seems to have an incredible day that he can maybe be able to hang on. Lotto, not seeing Van Gils or, yeah, so Andreas Kron, perhaps, for them. Other than that, yeah, Joey Roscoff for the Americans, riding in Q36.5. Cortec, these guys are just pack filler with hoping to get in the break. So, who do I think is going to win this overall? It depends. Oh, Alaphilippe's also riding here for Sudal. I mean, I think UAE comes in here as the overall favorite, but you look for Bernal to do well too. So UAE, depending on who they get, Bernal, I'd say Giulio Ciccone has a great chance. And you never know about Robert Hessink, but perhaps Lenny Martinez too. So, and then, yeah, as Victor said, Giro begins May 4th. And there you go. All right, so good Ardennes Classics. The Classics are over. How do you rate those, really? I think the best way to say it is it started off pretty good for Visma Lisa Bike. It went really well in the middle there for Matthew Vanderpoel. And UAE, they actually did well. I mean, Paris-Roubaix, they were fourth. They come out here with a win on Liège. I could probably break down each of those. Maybe next show we'll take a look back at each one of those and kind of give a breakdown of the teams of how well they did. And then you have the Giro coming up here. And you know, it looks like to me that the Giro is really the Pogacar show. I mean, I don't see. We'll do a breakdown of the Giro coming up here. But I mean, you know, we can maybe even look through. Not everybody's teams have set their teams out here. Hugh Carthy for UAE, Ineos. I mean, I think they've got Geraint Thomas, Trek. That doesn't show who they've got going up there yet. Team Visa, Lisa Bike. I mean, they're showing Laporte, Bowen, Cohen Bowen, Altila Valter, Tratnik, Affini, Hessink, Utebrooks, and Coy. So maybe this is Utebrooks' chance to really try to pull off a tour. I mean, you know, he did fairly well. Was he fourth, fifth, something like that in the Vuelta? So, you know, I can actually take a look at how well he actually did. I don't remember the actual number. I know he was riding well for the most part at the Vuelta this last year, and La Vuelta a España state general classification, he was eighth. So he didn't light it up, but he actually, for being the young man, he did do just fine. So there you go. Ardian's classics are done. Enjoyed those. Should probably do a little bit of a thing on American racing, which was we had the Redlands Classic. Our own Cole Davis won a stage down there. So we should probably highlight that at some point. But if not, until next time, folks. Oh, let's see. Did we get a Poggi at the Giro? Yes, that's right, Victor. So, okay, everybody. Well, thanks for tuning in, and we'll hit you off with a little Giro breakdown with Christopher.
Froome now, he goes on the offensive, he goes on the attack over the top of this final climb, and nobody at the moment can go with him.
He has 75 kilometers to go, and now under the Flamme Rouge, there he is still, the virtual Malia Rosa on the road. Who'd have thought it at the start of today? But Chris Froome.